Let's Ask the Professor. Second hour of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Our guest today in this hour is Professor Rick Mars, Associate Professor of Practical Theology here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. This is the campus where our radio station is located. Summer term is underway at Concordia Seminary. The call day is over. Graduation is over. Yep. So you got your feet propped up and just kind of cruising through the summer months here, right?
Well, I just finished teaching a 2-week intensive summer class last week. So, yes, this week is a little more laid back than the last 6 weeks of
that. What was the class?
Crisis intervention.
Crisis intervention.
Yeah.
The world is... Is a class like crisis intervention doing at Concordia Seminary?
Well, because pastors run into crises, and it would be better for them to have some preparation for it before they get out there rather than...
What kind of a crisis?
Oh, we talked about all kinds of crises. I mean, just the standard crises that pastors have to deal with, the death of parishioners and funerals and things like that, but... Crises that happen in divorce, crises like murder and suicide.
Murder
and all those
suicide,
things. So,
goodness. Yeah, those things happen in the church?
Well, that congregation up in the Chicago area just last month that had three of its members murdered in that one situation. And I know the International Center got phone calls from the Chicago newspapers saying, we're so impressed with how those pastors in Arlington Heights handled this tragic situation. We're wondering, how do you train your pastors to do those sorts of things? So,
well, you have recently written an article, it's not very long, short article,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know who gave you the advice on this, but why did they ask you to write about this completely irrelevant question here? the title of the article is, What Does God Want Me to Be When I'm an Adult? Don't you know that we're in the United States of America, and the only question we ever ask is, what do I want to do? What does God want? Not what does God want me to be. It's what do I want to be? So are there people actually asking this question?
Yeah. And this is written for Higher Things magazine, which is a... magazine directed towards Lutheran youth, teenagers and such. So very impressed with what Higher Things as a group is doing out there with their various conferences and stuff. And they put out a quarterly magazine that I think is just really high quality, well done. So I was pleased when they asked me to write an article for them and said, well, how about this for a topic? And they jumped at it because they know teenagers are wondering, what should I do for the rest of my life? And it's one thing that I know a little bit more about than most other pastors do, because I used to teach career counseling, actually, to master's level counselors, so my PhD.
In a secular setting?
Well, I taught at Concordia River Forest for 12 years, and so they've got a master's degree program in counseling, and so I was one of the guys that taught the career counseling course to prospective master's level counselors, and it was one of my majors in my PhD program, so it's been an interest area for me for a long time, and I tell people partly it's an interest for me because I'm about as confused in my own career development as anybody else. So.
Well, the article here has a photograph right in the middle between, sort of like between the pages, as I'm sure you're well aware, of a couple of teenagers, a teenage boy. I'm glad to see it appears that he has his pants up around his waist here. That's a good sign, although he looks like a pretty hip guy. And then there's a teenage girl. They're standing back to back. The teenage girl here, Professor Mars, appears to have something of an attitude there. What's going on with that, do you think?
I didn't do the graphics for this, but yeah, there's a cute couple there, and sometimes teenagers do have an attitude towards, I'm frustrated with this, why can't you help me, or maybe I don't think I need any help. I should be independent and do this on my own, but career development's one thing where we should reach out and try to get some help from other people, because we don't know all of the various options that are out there.
I'm sure you're not a walking statistical bank of information here, but I'm going to ask you for your best guess.
All right.
For teenagers like this boy and girl that are pictured here in the article, out of every 10, how many do you think are going through high school anticipating college, maybe getting ready to enter college, who sort of have a, last year I was in school, the year before that I was in school, when I got to the end of the school year, they told me, now you're going to do this, and I got to the end of this year, they tell me you're going to do this, and I just keep doing whatever's next.
Mm-hmm.
How many out of 10 have that attitude, or not attitude, perspective, as opposed to, well, I really need to think about what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah. Well, and it depends on what age you're asking at it, and that's why I think we should be doing something to bring career development.
Who's we?
We adults, parents, teachers, counselors, all working together to actually bring those sorts of things into the curriculum. Not that our curriculum should be too pragmatic, but I think every year along the way, from kindergarten through 12th grade and into college, we should have some part of the curriculum that actually says, do you realize these are the kinds of jobs that people do in this particular area that we're studying, of math?
Was it like that when you were in high school?
I remember doing a paper for a math class where the math teacher actually said, I want you to explore a particular career. Here's the stuff that you can look up. And the career I ended up exploring, ironically enough, was pastor. And I didn't end up entering into that career until I was 40 years old. So had some influence possibly along the way. Obviously, I was considering it when I was in high school.
But. So do you have your finger on the pulse of American higher level education, high school, college? How well are we doing to say to a human being, you know, human being Bob here, Bob is equipped with certain gifts and skills and weaknesses and problems, and he's probably predisposed for some things and not well matched to others.
Mm-hmm.
How well are we doing in our country of helping Bob go in a direction that will make him successful or position him for success?
Well, I think there is plenty of information out there now on the internet, but also from agencies and stuff, if Bob knows where to look. But sometimes we don't even point Bob, whether Bob is 15 or Bob is 51, we don't point Bob in the right direction, and so he feels kind of hopeless, helpless to know where to look.
See, I guess I'm under the presumption that we don't do this hardly at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time since I was in school, so a lot of things obviously could have changed. But my experience was counselors would say, what do you want to do?
Mm.
What are you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, most of us are smart enough to know better and say, I don't know. So, you know, we'll say, well, you know, I enjoy history or I enjoy math or whatever it is. And so then, you know, you can lay a few general vague options in front of you, and, you know, basically all we're worried about is getting registered for whatever it is next year.
Mm.
And then at the end of that, there we are with a sort of a train of experience behind us, and now we got to decide to be an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, be a surgeon or something.
Yeah. And that was why I taught the career development courses, both the undergraduate and the graduate level that I taught, because I wanted to influence prospective counselors to be more energetic when they got to their school, so that they didn't see it just as only their personal job to talk about career development, but they actually went and talked to the principal, went and talked to the teachers, and actually encouraged all those people to bring pieces of this into the curriculum. And there, again, lots of stuff out there, whether it's interest inventories or computer programs like Discover that we used at the colleges that I worked at, which can really open up the eyes of students to all the various tens of thousands of possibilities for them out there.
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. It is a difficult decision. That's kind of how I started the article, too, is, you know, it's one thing if you have to make a decision on what kind of ice cream that you get, if there's only three choices of ice cream in your refrigerator, in your freezer at home. But when you go to Brahms or Baskin-Robbins or whatever, and they've got 87 different kinds of ice cream, you kind of, oh, what should I choose? What should I choose? And if somebody were to tell you, this is the kind of ice cream, you get one choice of ice cream, and that's the only ice cream you can eat for the next 10 years, that would multiply that decision greatly. I mean, it would just make it much more complicated. And that's kind of what we do with career decision making. There are literally tens of thousands of occupations out there. There are Occupational Outlook Handbook and Dictionary of Occupational Titles that the government puts out that, again, 20, 30,000 different occupations that students can choose from. And it's overwhelming if you don't have kind of a grid to start narrowing that down, saying, I don't think I'm going to be interested in these 10,000 over here or these 5,000 over here. I think I'm going to be more interested in these 3,000 over here, and then next year I'm going to narrow that down to 300, and next year down to 30, and so forth. So, but there are ways that students and adults can explore those sorts of things. The other thing I really always like to point out to students is that 75% of them don't know what they want to be when they grow up, when they enter college. I mean, that's the actual stats.
Three out of four. Are going into college, and they don't know what they want to do with their lives in 4 years.
Uh-huh. And half of them will say that they do know what they want to do, and half of them will admit that they don't. But if the half that say that they know what they want to do, half of those change their mind. So that's why we say 75% total aren't really fully decided. And even those that decide, the average person changes careers. And I don't mean just jobs within a occupation, but changes careers like 6 or 7 times throughout their life. So again, if people are in the midst of job change because of economic realities or whatever, don't feel like they're completely going through something new. This has been something going on for decades.
Your article begins with this paragraph. Before the 1800s, answering lifelong career questions was fairly straightforward for young people. Most of them did what their parents did. If you were a farmer, then you became a farmer. If your dad was a farmer, if he had a local business, you worked in that business.
Yep.
And girls got married, had babies, and took care of homes.
Yep.
I would say that that lasted even beyond the 1800s.
Yep, to a large degree.
Are we completely on the other side of that spectrum now?
Largely, yeah. Again, a lot of kids do still go into family businesses, but I don't know what the stats are. I would guess it's 10% or less. But and, you know, many women do primarily become mothers, but at least most women are not wholly. Now, that's the only vocation that they have. They go out and work at least part-time sometime during their lifetime. So, you know, how can they find part-time work that is beneficial for them and rewarding both personally and professionally?
This is a bit of an exaggeration, but if we are on the other side of the spectrum, if everybody, if every teenager, almost every teenager, is looking for some kind of career, do we have some kind of obligation, some kind of social and cultural obligation to make sure that all the ones who want to be teachers don't become teachers if we don't need teachers?
Mm-hmm.
Or all the ones that want to become dentists don't become dentists because we already have enough dentists. Be something else. Or should we just, in this free country, allow them to follow their hearts to do whatever they want?
And again, that's part of the career counseling and career development process that, that we teach counselors about. There's actually a whole host of information out there on labor market. And my uncle used to be the North Dakota Occupational Information Coordinating Committee chairperson for the entire state. And they provide occupational information for people in their regions. And then they tell them, these are particular occupations that seem to be growing over the next 10 or 15 years. These are occupations that are declining. And that should be part of your decision-making process, because you don't, you run a higher risk of losing the job if you're going into a declining market, and a greater risk of keeping jobs that you like if you're going into a growing market. So
you list some questions here for teenagers. I guess this is for high schoolers, or I guess you could be first year of college, something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Here's question number one. Let's see what Dr. Rick Mars has for answers to these questions. Should I do what I'm interested in or what I'm good at?
The research shows that there's about a 0.25 correlation between interests and abilities, and that's not a real high correlation.
0.25, is that 25%?
It's not exactly. No, it's not exactly
20.
Yeah, it's not even a percentage sort of thing. It's a correlation coefficient, and I probably shouldn't have used it on the radio. Sorry. But anyway, basically means that there's only a low to low moderate degree of relationship between our interests and our abilities.
Well, that's bad.
1.0 would be a perfect relationship. 0.5 is a pretty strong relationship.
So the person who finds a career, which is what he or she is interested in, and what she or he is good at, is rare?
That's moderately rare. So Not
That's kind of discouraging.
But yeah, and so a lot of people do have to end up choosing either an occupation that they're good at, that they're not quite as interested in, or that they are really interested in, but they kind of struggle because they're never going to be quite as good at it as some of the other people in the occupation. And again, we just encourage people to kind of think that through and say, which is more important to you?
Well, what's the answer to that question?
It's going to depend on each individual. But they need to think it through for themselves.
It seems to me, this is kind of eye-opening here, because for a young person who's been around for 15, 16, 17, 18 years and has discovered that they're really good at this, mm-hmm. or they're really good at that, I guess I just would have assumed that they'd be interested in what they were good in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily true?
Not necessarily true. Again, they can't keep exploring, and they might find some occupation, because there are 20 or 30,000 of them out there, that does combine their interests and their abilities. I got an email from a student that had read the article yesterday, and the student was saying he was good at art and wondering if he should go into art. And so I, sent him back an email saying, you pursue your passions, pursue your interests, but also realize you may not end up going into performance art or music or drama, because different people are usually interested in those same things. Because those are really hard professions to enter into and make money at. But other people do enter into art in terms of teaching or in the business aspect of art. They sell art, or they manage art in some way, or they're in an art museum. So there are ways to incorporate your interests and your abilities. If you find your abilities are more in the business end, but your interests are in the art end, well, find some occupation that might combine both of those.
What would you say to a young person who might be listening to us right now, who hears me ask this question, which is in your article,
mm-hmm.
should I do what I'm interested in or what I'm good at? And that person says, yeah, that is exactly what I'm facing right now. What is the answer, Dr. Mars? And you go, well, it depends. Oh, no, and this person's never going to run into you.
Right.
So they're disappointed. Is there an answer in general here? Does it
lean
in one direction?
I think each one of those young people need to spend some time with a career counselor or another trusted adult that understands these things to some degree and get some... struggle with them for several hours as to what is most important to them at this time. If they value being successful, because values play a role in this as well, and those are distinct from abilities and interests. If they value being successful, well, then they probably should go with their abilities. If they value not being bored, then they should probably go with their interests. And so, those sorts of things are going to vary from person to person.
So how do you know? Yeah, okay. Dr. Mars, I'm going to follow your advice, go to my high school, talk to the counselor there. How do I know that my counselor is on the ball? How do I know that he isn't just giving me a line of a bull,
mm-hmm.
Speaking in very high counseling platitudes, but really not helping me at all? How do you know when you found a good counselor?
That's a really good question, because that's going to vary from person to person, too. So some people, counselors tend to help kind of 70, 75, 80% of the people they see. No counselor is so good that they are impactful for 100%. So if you don't feel like you're really getting helped, well, go to the local community college or something and see if a career counselor there at the community college may be able to be helpful.
But you could be just nodding, and your counselor could be seeming to say all kinds of wonderful things,
mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't want to see, you wouldn't seek somebody else, but your counselor is giving you a line.
And that's why I think it's important not just to talk about career issues with your counselor, but also with your parents, with other people, that other adults that you like. I mean, go and follow somebody that's in an occupation that you're kind of interested in, and ask them if you could follow them around for a day or two. Shadow them is what the process is called. And you end up being mentored by them for that day or two, and you wonder, wow, this is really cool. I like this job. Or you find out, I didn't realize this is what they have to do day in, day out, hour after hour. This is really boring. I don't want to do this after all. But that 8 hours of investment in mentoring and shadowing can be very, very eye-opening. Because a lot of it is trying to figure out what I don't want to do, not so much finding the one perfect job. If you can do enough exploration that you find out, oh, okay, I don't want to go this direction and this direction, you narrow out those bad possibilities and you can focus on good possibilities.
Question number two is, should I seek the vocation that will pay the most money or do something I'll be happy yet poorer doing?
Yeah.
Answer?
That's a big dilemma for lots of people. I'm sorry, I keep giving you the dilemma answers, don't I? You don't like these, do you?
No.
This is how counselors sort of
work.
We
like the black and white answers.
Yeah, that's right.
But on the Bible study here, we're used to getting very few of those. So,
yeah, that's true.
I'll be all right.
That's true. And, you know, again, that's going to depend more upon their values. We do live in a culture where people will say, oh, you know, you should really go into the occupation where you can make the most money. But, you know, there are lots of people making lots of money that aren't very satisfied with their occupation, and they're wanting to retire when they get to be 50 or 55 because they just don't like what they're doing.
I'm going to guess that an 18-year-old is going to say, I want to follow my heart. I want to do something I love, even if I don't make a lot of money at it. And then that same 18-year-old, when he's 40, will say,
"What did I do?
I need some money here. I've got three kids and, right. you know, whatever. And what was I thinking?
Yeah.
You know, I should have taken that sales job back when I had that opportunity because I need some money here. Is that a true assessment?
Yeah. And that's why I think we need to be realistic or point students towards the realism of what the financial and economic realities are out there. You know, if they're entering into an occupation that, you know, I've had students say to me, well, is $10,000 a lot of money for a year? No, not anymore. You know, is $20,000 an occupation? Well, not very much. You know, you probably want to shoot for something where you're making at least $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. You know, and again, some occupations, they start out higher than what I'm making right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at 50 years old. And so I remember being a counselor one time and an intern or a student that was going into an internship was going to make more money than I was during his internship than I was as a counselor.
Yeah.
Just because he's going into engineering or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, those sorts of occupations pay more.
What if I start in one career and then change my mind?
Very common occurrence. So why
is
should
that a
we?
Failure?
No, I don't believe so. In fact, I hope not because I've done it. So,
but don't you think that aren't young people? They're still idealistic, aren't they, Dr.
Right.
Mars? I mean, they say to themselves, "Ooh, I feel like I want to do this, or I want to do this. I want to do this. Oh, I don't know what to do." So they're going to go with this. But if it turns out in 3, 4, 5 years that the decision was wrong, they fear that that'll be perceived as a failure, and that paralyzes them at this moment.
Right.
Does that happen?
Yeah. And so, again, that's why we want to tell them, said, be aware that the average person does change careers 5, 6, 7 times during their lifetime. It is not a failure to get to be 30 and say, oh, I didn't realize this occupation, this accounting or this engineering or this pastoral ministry or whatever was going to be like this. I think I'd like to go a different direction. And maybe they don't go a completely different direction. They just go a moderately different direction. They can still use some of the same skills they learned in the first 10 or 20 years of their life to apply into the next 20 or 30 years of their
life. So it's okay to change your mind.
Yes, very much.
Dr. Rick Mars is with us here today. We're talking about an article that he has written titled, What Does God Want Me to Be When I'm an Adult? I'm still asking that question. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back. Here at AM 850 KFUO, as we look forward to our anniversary on December 14th, we are so grateful to our partners who have become anniversary underwriters in 2009. We say thanks to Concordia Publishing House, publishing works of inspiration and faith for more than 139 years, and Lutheran Senior Services, specializing in enhancing life for seniors at 19 locations in Missouri and Illinois. Thanks for celebrating with us on the occasion of our 85th anniversary year.
Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer for Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. Coming up this weekend, how should parents deal with negative teen friends? The difference between healthy and unhealthy marriages and using reality discipline on your kids. That's all coming up on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday morning at 10:04 on AM 850 KFUO. We all know that fish breathe with gills, but some don't. Learn more about them on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
The idea of fish with lungs sounds about as strange as elephants with wings. The difference is there really are fish with lungs. In fact, there are many varieties of lungfish found in Australia, Africa, and South America. In Australia, they live in quiet pools of water that become stagnant in the summer. Because there isn't much oxygen dissolved in the water, these fish need lungs in order to breathe air just as we do. Lungfish in the South American swamps spend their time resting in burrows when the swamps dry up in summer. In a similar way, the lungfish in Africa spends the dry season burrowed in the mud, with a breathing tube to the surface. Evolutionists have suggested that the lungfish is left over from the time when sea creatures were adapting to life on land, but their theory doesn't hold water, so as to speak. Lungfish show little interest in moving to land. Besides, they lack important biological features that would make that move possible. And what's more, the lungfishes we find in the fossil record are exactly the same as those living today. There is absolutely no evidence of evolution here. While the lungfish is an unusual creature, it is a testimony to the creativity and wisdom of the Creator, and it offers no support at all for the evolutionary speculations.
To purchase a copy of Ian Taylor's book, In the Minds of Men, call us toll-free at 800-42-BIBLE. That's 800-422-4253. Or visit us online at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
It's a priority at AM 850 KFUO that we provide our listeners with ample opportunities to hear live worship every weekend. And we appreciate that this commitment is shared by Pastor Chuck Spomer and the members of Ascension Lutheran Church in South St. Louis. Tune in and share scripture, sermon, song, and prayer with a congregation who cares about your spiritual health. Live worship every Saturday evening at 5 p.m. from Ascension Lutheran Church in South St. Louis on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, this is Dr. Jim Lamb. I'm the Executive Director of Lutherans for Life, inviting you to celebrate the abundant life with us. That's the theme of our national conference to be held in St. Louis, July 24th through the 25th. Learn more about this God-given abundant life. Visit LutheransForLife.org for more information and to register for the conference.
Or call 888-364-LIFE.
You got a kid who's trying to figure out what he or she wants to do with the rest of his or her life? It's a big question. And we're talking about that today with Professor Rick Mars. He is in one of the four departments at Concordia Seminary, the practical department there?
Practical department.
So when all the long hairs want to figure out how to read the Google map, they come to you and say, can you help us with this? They're not interested. All right, let's look at question number four here of the five questions that you list in your article. Who can help me make such important decisions? That may be the key question here in the group, I think.
Yeah. And that's what I've kind of said. I at least point high school students towards their high school counselors.
How about mom and dad?
Mom and dad should be involved.
Mom and dad should be involved. But when it comes to, I mean, career counseling is a job. It's something you learn to become, right?
But we learn a lot about our occupational life from our parents. And what do our parents value in those things? How hard do our parents work? Do they like their jobs? Do they dislike their jobs? Are they good at their jobs or are they not so good at their jobs? Those sorts of values then are learned over the 18 years, and career counselors can't just change that kind of thing in 1 hour or 1 hour or 2 hours.
Take your average American parent of an 18-year-old, and you say to the parent about the child, do you think he should seek the vocation that will pay the most money? Or do something that he'll be happy doing. What's the parent going to say?
they're probably going to say, I want to make sure they're at least making enough money that they will be...
out of my house.
That they will not be poor for the rest of their lives. Yeah. And so that's why some parents may direct some, and some counselors direct some students away from, like, career or church career sort of occupations, because they think, oh, they won't make enough money. I've actually heard that from career counselors or from students who went into church work careers who told me, I didn't have a successful relationship with my high school counselor because when she saw that I had a 28 on my ACT, she said, oh, you should go into engineering or law or medicine or something like that. And I said, well, I'm thinking about going into church work. And they went, you're going to do what? You can't make any money doing that. So, again, sometimes counselors get their values kind of out of whack.
They're pretty much right.
They are right, but still, if God does provide for us in church work careers as well, and I'm satisfied with, you know, how I'm able to raise my family and the salary that I have here, and I was when I was a parish pastor as well.
Now, so. I know I sound so young on the radio that people probably think that, you know, I'm a very youthful guy, but I actually went to school way back in the 20th century. Okay? And I think my counselors were fine people, but my memory of going to my high school counselor was, okay, you're going to need a science course. You can take this, 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 or this. What do you want to do?
Right.
All right, I'll do this. Okay, you're going to need a history course. You can take this, 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 or this. What do you want to do? That, and so I, you know, here are the options. I made my selections, and that was my counseling. Is that not true anymore? Is it much more involved than that, or is that pretty much the way it is now?
I think a lot of high school counselors do end up still dealing with the pragmatics of registration and so forth, and that's part of the thing that the school assigns them to. But hopefully they can work with their administrators to let them know my job should be more than that. So I should be helping students with their personal problems, if they're having personal problems, and I should be helping them with their career problems, or at least there should be one counselor in a large high school that is directed towards the career counseling stuff and having a career center within their high school. And a lot of, again, community colleges and four-year colleges have these career centers now that they didn't have back when you and I were in college. I implemented the first career center at St. John's College in Winfield in 1983. It had never had one before. And the River Forest started one about that same time under somebody else, and then I went to River Forest 3 years later to teach there. So, yeah, colleges were starting to implement these things in the 70s and 80s, but most of them do have them now, and it just happened after you and I were in college.
So if a young person were listening to us today and they said, wow, you know, I didn't know that there was more. I thought that I just went to my counselor to get my registration filled out. If a high school person, let's say he's going into his junior year, and he says, I'm going to check this out. So he makes an appointment with his high school counselor, and he says, I'm trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life and where to focus on my energy in college. What's supposed to happen when the counselor is presented with that challenge?
Here is all the information that is in our career center. I want to teach you how to find this information and then come back to me next week and 3 weeks later and 3 months from now to ask me more questions about, well, what about this and what about this? It should be more than just a one-hour kind of relationship between the student and this counselor.
It should be.
But it should continue on. And then, I said, I used to teach a one-semester or two-semester-hour career development course in college. They could take it for credit and actually explore all these various options in a college class. And most college classes, most colleges do have a class like that now. So,
here's the fifth of your five questions. Is this a practical question or is this a spiritual question? And how does God's will work into all of this?
Right, right. There are a lot of Christian young people, and I think I was kind of naive like this at the time, and think, oh, if I just keep praying about it, I don't need to explore all these things. I don't need to collect information. God will just reveal to me what he wants me to do. You know, there's going to be some sort of magic
that doesn't
tap
happen
on my shoulder. It might happen for some kids, but I don't think God necessarily is going to tell them on Facebook or send them an email that this is what occupation I want you to go into. God does want us to pray about those things, but it's not one of the points I try to make in the article. It's not just about self-fulfillment. but it's actually God preparing us for the 80,000 hours of good works that he has planned for us to do in our occupation. Where we're doing, I mean, if you multiply 40 hours a week by 50 weeks a year for 40 years, that comes up to 80,000 hours that we spend in work. And God has an infrastructure that he's designed for this entire planet. I mean, we talk about it in the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer. What is meant by daily bread? All the support and needs of the body, such as food, drink, clothing, shoes, house, home, land, animals, money, goods, devout husband and wife, devout children, devout workers, devout and faithful rulers, good government, good weather, peace, health, self-control, good reputation, good faithful neighbors, and the like. All of those things work together to bring us our daily bread and our income in this life. If we didn't have truckers, how would we get our food? If we didn't have farmers, who would have that to put on the trucks? If we didn't have grocery stores and grocery store people working in those things, and if we didn't have business people kind of working behind the scenes in all of those things, doing the accounting work to make sure it's all organized and all the bills are getting paid, you know, all of these things are part of the infrastructure that God has put into place for us, including good government, because the truckers couldn't run down the road if the government hadn't built the roads in the first place. So all of these things are necessary. And so we're making decisions, you know, should I work in government? Would I be skilled at that? Would I be interested in that and help make sure the roads are built and the taxes are paid and the army is subsidized in appropriate way? Or should I work in the army? Is that a God-pleasing thing? Or should, you know, it's all these various occupations that God has created, and how can we then fulfill the good works, Ephesians 2:10, the good works that he's prepared in advance for us to do? Because you're going to get a lot more opportunities to do those good works in your occupation than you are in your other aspects of life.
I'm aware of a young person who, going through school, he felt two clear tugs in the career direction.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, well, that's good. You've got to narrow down to two.
Right.
But he couldn't prioritize one over the other. Just couldn't do it. And prayed and prayed and prayed. Lord, show me what you want me to do. Option A or option B? Option A. No word from the Lord in high school. No word from the Lord in college. And so it was just sort of evolved. It wound up winding up in the direction of option A, let's say. Graduation. Got a nice job. 1 year in that career, I'm out of here. Back to school. More school. Now having graduated and in option B career and happy. Is that person entitled to be angry with God?
They may be angry with God, and they may have to work through that, and God can handle their anger just like a parent can handle the anger of a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old at times. But I think they may, after a certain time frame, look back on it and go, well, I'm glad God directed me away from that career so that I wasn't in it for 10 years or 20 years, because they could have gotten kind of stalled out. So the fact that he was blessed by only being in that other career for 1 year is...
And I know for a fact that he's not angry. But I have to think that somewhere in the recesses of his own heart and mind, he might have said, you know, God, this would have been a lot easier if you could have just let me know this when I was a senior in high school or when I was a sophomore in college. I could have saved a lot of time and a little bit of money, too.
But God calls us to trust him in whatever.
Well, that goes with your fifth question here. How does God's will work into all this? Well, what if God doesn't reveal his will until you've gone down a dead end or two?
Well, mainly he reveals his will to us in Jesus Christ. I mean, first and foremost, we are called to be Christians, and he baptizes us into Christ's death and resurrection, and that changes our lives forever. So regardless of whether we're in a particular occupation for a year or a particular occupation for 5 years, we're still his children, and he still loves us. And so we always want to keep first things first and realize that that's who we are. And then it's not just our career, but how do all these other vocations that he calls us into, you know, being a father and a mother and a sister and a brother and a civilian or a person in the a civic leader in some way. How do all of these various roles play into my life as well, not just my occupation? We Americans can sometimes get overly bent on, you know, my occupation defining us, and especially we men can define ourselves by the occupation that we're in. But in reality, I think we should define ourselves by whose we are, that is, Jesus Christ.
So what is the Holland Hexagon?
That's one of the most popular and most well-researched theories about career development. And so I describe it a little bit in the article, that there's basically six different types of people and six different types of work environment, and we're all a combination of all six.
Wow, you were able to narrow it down to six.
Six, yep. So, and if people at least understand this simple little hexagon shape, and again, a lot of research to show that this has a lot of validity to it. It's not just somebody's opinion kind of floating out there, but six different types, people that like to work in realistic occupations, that is, they like to do things with their hands, build things, so farmers, carpenters, engineers, people that are investigative, they like to do scientific or mathematics sorts of things, people that are artistic, art, music, drama, people that are social, they like to be with and help other people in some way, so teachers, pastors, nurses and such, people that are enterprising. These are the people that like to work with other people but influence them in some way. So business, law, and then the last one,
conventional.
Those are the people that are the organizers in life. They keep the rest of us on the straight and narrow. So the accountants, the bookkeepers, the
police
fall a little bit more into the realistic area, but there'd be some social. I think policemen tend to be SR.
So could you give me a, can I take a test? And
yeah.
The test is going to tell me what?
You're a combination of SRA or IEC or something like that, and then you can explore occupations.
As long as it doesn't show a DUD.
No Ds in this particular theory. But, yeah, it'll give you your top two or three personality types, and then you can explore occupations that are at least similar to those two or three occupation or personality types, and people that tend to enter into occupations that are more similar to their personality tend to be more satisfied long-term with their occupational choices than those people that go a completely different direction.
I remember years and years ago, a guy wanted to recruit me into his business.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me a test. And from a personality perspective, I didn't match up very well with what it was that he was hoping mm-hmm. that I would do. And he said, I'm not going to lie to you. He says, you didn't do very well on the test. And he says, and I got to tell you this, this test is almost always right.
Hmm.
So how about this Holland Hexagon? If I take the test and I get the results back and I'm surprised, and maybe I should be thinking about this and this when I've all this time I've been thinking about that and that. Should I rely pretty strongly on the test? Is it? I know there's no test that's
right.
Airtight, but,
right.
You know, is it a pretty good indicator?
I would say at least let it influence the process moderately. So, yeah, it's one of those cases where some people go into occupations and they're very satisfied and they completely are a mismatch, according to this theory, to what other people are in the occupation. And they usually will even say, I know I'm not like everybody else in this occupation, but I still like doing what I'm doing. And that's an important realization for them as well. So I think even taking the tests can be helpful to people. Even if they go a direction that the test doesn't point them to, they at least know, oh, okay, I'm going to be different than other accountants, or I'm going to be different than other policemen, or I'm going to be different than other pastors. And again, even within occupations, you know, medical doctors are not completely homogeneous. Surgeons tend to be more investigative and realistic, whereas pediatricians tend to be more social. They tend to be more like teachers. And again, that kind of makes some sense.
Sure.
So, even within one occupational group, you may be able to specialize and do something different.
One thing that in what is otherwise a superficial conversation here, I mean, we're talking about a fairly sophisticated thing here. Making a decision what you're going to do with the rest of your life.
Right, right.
Probably requires a little bit more than an hour of chatter between you and me.
Yes,
but
go make the decision out there based on what I've said in the last 45 minutes.
One thing that I don't see here is tenacity. whatever you decide to do,
mm-hmm.
it's going to require a certain level of tenacity,
right.
isn't it? You're going to have to work for whatever it is that you want to do.
Yep.
You're going to have to compete with other people for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How important is tenacity in this equation? What if I got no tenacity?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to depend somewhat on the occupation you go into. If you're going into an enterprising occupation where you are wanting to influence people and sales and law and so forth, if you have very little tenacity, you're probably not going to be very successful at it. If you want to go into art and you actually want to be performing in art, music, and drama, and you don't have a lot of passion for practicing and things like that, then you're probably not going to be real successful at it. But in other occupations, some social occupations, some conventional occupations, maybe you don't have to have as much tenacity to be successful in those.
All right. Suppose I were to offer out of my deep pool of ignorance my own answer to the question that
All right.
posed here. The title of your article is, What Does God Want Me to Be When I'm an Adult? If I were to answer that question as, God doesn't care what you do as an adult. He gives the proposition entirely to you. It's yours to explore, and whatever you choose to do, as long as it's not prostitution or bank robbery, whatever you choose to do is just fine with him. What do you think of my answer?
I think he does have, I would say, he has good works prepared in advance for us to do. We might be able to avoid those or go do a different set of good works that he's also said, okay, I have these that you could do as well. So I don't think he's disinterested, but I also don't think that he has necessarily one particular occupation that he said, okay, this is the one best one and I want you to search for it. He knows that we are his children and he's called us to follow him in whatever direction we may be going occupationally or familially or, can I say that? And in terms of our civic opportunities and so forth, there are lots of other callings that we have, and we want to make sure that, you know, our occupational calling doesn't get in the way of being good parents or being a good spouse. Those are other callings that he has put us to. Even in the fourth petition, we said those are part of the faithfulness aspect. We want a faithful spouse. And I'm very glad that God has given me a faithful spouse, a faithful wife, because it helps us economically as well as relationally and spiritually and all those things.
So what if I were to answer your question, what does God want me to be when I'm an adult, this way, quoting Ephesians 2:10, that we are saved by grace through faith, Ephesians 8 and 9, for the doing of works that have been prepared for us to do before the foundation of the world. Isn't that the way verse 10 goes, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. I think that may be chapter 1 there.
Therefore, it's important that I become a policeman because I'm going to develop a relationship with somebody who I actually arrest 25 years from now, and I will provide them through that relationship the knowledge that they need, which will lead eventually to their conversion. And if I'm not there to be the policeman, then that's going to be missing, and that person might be lost, and so I need to be in that job. God has foreseen this before the foundation of the world, and it's up to me to find out what it is God wants me to do and be there when that moment arrives.
But that puts a lot of pressure on us.
You bet it does, brother.
God.
I'm putting some pressure on here, aren't I?
We are not omniscient. He is. So, again, I think he can work out a variety of things for us in our Christian life. And I don't want to put so much pressure on somebody that they, oh, I have to find this one right thing, because that can paralyze them in the decision-making process. That's another part of the whole career process, is how do you make decisions? Are you overly impulsive in your career decision-making, or are you agonizing in your career decision-making? And some agonizing people can never, ever come to make a decision. They're always wondering, is there one thing out there that's even better? Sometimes you just have to jump and get into something, and then if you find out a year later that's not really what you thought it was, then you move on to something else, and you know God has prepared you in those things.
I see you and you and me sitting on a park bench there under the tree of life someday in eternal bliss, and I'm thinking that we'll be reviewing our time here on Earth and the various places that mm-hmm. you've worked, some of the career changes you've made. I've worked at a number of radio stations in my life, turned down some opportunities to do some other things mm-hmm. that make me wonder later on, you know, maybe I should have done that. What are the odds that we'll be sitting there on that park bench and we'll just be amazed, we'll just be astonished at how these decisions that we thought were so difficult, that we wrestled with so much in this life, that we can see now in the context of a much larger reality,
mm-hmm.
and how it really was all worked out very nicely by the Lord Jesus Christ, even though
exactly.
it seems so vague to us now.
Right. Right.
Is that what you're expecting?
As I was preparing this, I opened up a book that I hadn't opened up in 10 years or so on career decision making from a Christian perspective, and I found within it a paper that a student had given me probably 15 years ago. And in the paper, there was a little sticky note on it saying, "Thank you so much for teaching this class." And I was looking at it going, "Gosh, I can't even remember this student, but I had some influence over her when she took this career decision making class." And so, you know, it left me wondering, you know, how did I influence her and what did she look like? And so, again, all those little good works that God's prepared in advance for us to do that we can't even remember because we have bad memories, but He remembers. And some of the people that He puts in our path, they remember the influence that we had. And I had somebody do that to me last week, said, "Oh, yeah, my son said you were so influential in what you taught him when you had him in class." I'm going, "Oh, yeah, I forgot about his son." And, "Oh, yeah, his son was a really good guy." So how do we go about, you know, realizing that God has prepared thousands and millions of things for us to do in those 80,000 hours?
Got about a minute left here. What would you say to a person who is listening to us, probably a parent who is listening to us, but a parent who knows that his or her son or daughter is just all torn up, just paralyzed by the myriad of options that you've described here, and maybe hasn't gotten much help from this counselor or that counselor, doesn't know what to do next, and is just really kind of in fear about what to do. Is there a way to break out of that from your perspective?
Explore. Maybe get a part-time job in the place that they're thinking or in the occupation that they're thinking about, just so they can maybe only go to school part-time and work part-time so that they get that work experience. Once they start getting some work experience, I think a lot of people break out of that fear of making the one right decision. And they realize, oh, okay, I'm learning a variety of skills and I'm getting at least the background to do a variety of different things, let me get some experience in that. So I think the combination of school and experience is very, very important for young people and old people.
Be careful where you're looking when you say that. That is Professor Rick Morris. Thank you, Professor.
Well, thank you again for having me.
I enjoyed the conversation here today, and that is our discussion on our Ask the Professor program. Professor Rick Morris, Concordia Seminary, here in the practical department of Concordia Seminary. Look forward to our next visit.
Very good.
All right, tomorrow we're going to do it. We're going to go into Leviticus chapter 1. Pastor Tom Hendrick.
Guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.